From KTOO in Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea with this news. The federal government has long recognized Alaska Native tribes, similar to how it recognizes tribes in the rest of the country. But Alaska state government hasn't been as consistent, and state lawmakers are looking to change that. Alaska Public Media and KTOO's Andrew Kitchenman reports.
Since the early 1990s, the federal government has included Alaska Native tribes on the list of federally recognized tribes. And in 1999, the Alaska Supreme Court ruled that the state must recognize them in the same way the federal government does. But even after that ruling, the state said Alaska Native tribes didn't have jurisdiction over adoptions, like tribes had elsewhere in the U.S. The state later changed that position, but this inconsistent history has left tribes with uncertainty about the future.
Mostly, the history between the state and the tribes haven't been great.
Natasha Singh testified in favor of House Bill 221, which would extend state recognition to federally recognized tribes. She's a Stevens Village tribal member and a lawyer for Tanana Chiefs Conference.
When I first entered my career 10 years ago, the T-word tribe was still somewhat off limits in some sectors.
Tribal representatives say the bill could remove uncertainty that could cloud the state's legal relationship with tribes. And the number of legal agreements between the state and tribes has been expanding. The state and tribes agreed to a compact in 2017 for tribes to oversee child welfare. And lawmakers have raised the possibility of similar compacts for public education and public safety. Ken Truitt is an aide to the bill's sponsor, Anchorage Republican Representative Chuck Kopp. Truitt is Tlingit and worked on the bill. He says there have been times when the state government denied tribal sovereignty and then asked tribes to waive their sovereign immunity from lawsuits.
If you don't exist and you don't exist as a sovereign, why does a state require a waiver of sovereign immunity before they'll issue a grant? So our hope is that that kind of thinking will come to an end.
House Speaker Bryce Edgman, a Dillingham independent, says the bill reflects progress. He's of Aleut heritage.
The journey that's taken place and the progress that's being made here, particularly in the last couple of years, has been almost rapid fire. And I view this legislation as watershed legislation. This is not an ordinary bill.
Homer Republican Representative Sarah Vance, who is non-native, says non-native residents outside of the Capitol building should be included in discussions over the bill.
We think that by asking for recognition as a tribe, it elevates the tribes over all of our other Alaskans. And we know that that's not true. That's not what's being asked. But I think that's the perception in a lot of non-native minds. And I would like to be able to have that conversation and talk about those uncomfortable things.
COP, the bill's sponsor, is not Alaska Native, but he says the state's failure to recognize tribes has contributed to intergenerational trauma and issues like suicide and drug and alcohol abuse.
We are absolutely incapable of moving forward as a state in any sense of wholeness unless we do this. That's really what this is about.
Richard Peterson is president of the Central Council of the Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska. He says talk of concepts like tribal compacts to provide education feels hollow without formal recognition of tribes.
It's a point of trauma and contention to this day that while we're asked to step up and be a partner, we're asked to waive our sovereignty, we can't get simple recognition. So I think this bill would really be a powerful way, again, to begin that healing.
Peterson says the recognition would acknowledge the thousands of years of Alaska Native history.
It does not give us any special standing over any other Alaska, but it recognizes our special place in Alaska.
The House Special Committee on Tribal Affairs is scheduled to hear public testimony on the bill on Tuesday. In Juneau, I'm Andrew Kitchenman.
The Environmental Protection Agency reports Alaska led the nation in 2018 in toxic chemical releases. But a state commissioner contends a large portion should not be categorized as toxic. The Juneau Empire reported that Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation Commissioner Jason Bruni says releases caused by unearthed rocks moved at mining sites do not have a significant effect on public health. Bruni says more than 99% of Alaska's 970 million pounds of releases were land releases connected to metal mining. The EPA reports that 30 Alaska facilities released about 972 million pounds of toxic release inventory chemicals. The village of King Cove runs on fish. The community of 900 sits near the end of the Alaska Peninsula. Fishermen deliver their catch from Gulf of Alaska and the Bering Sea to a huge processing plant owned by a company called Peter Pan Seafoods. And fish tax revenue pays for many of the town's bills. Now, though, Peter Pan has put the plant up for sale. And as Nat Herz with Alaska's Energy Desk reports, a shakeup in the seafood processing industry is raising questions about King Cove's future.
A.J. Newman catches salmon, pollock, and cod, and for three decades he's delivered load after load to the Peter Pan processing plant in King Cove. But he and others in the village have grown frustrated with the privately owned business. He says Peter Pan will only buy so much salmon from fishermen each day, while the processor in the next town over buys more.
You know, it's hard to watch your buddies catching double what you caught.
So when Silver Bay Seafoods opened a new processing plant 40 miles to the west last year in the tiny village of False Pass, Newman jumped at the opportunity.
The biggest part of switching was the market. Peter Pan had too many boats and they couldn't handle all the fish. We just didn't feel like they were hearing us. For years, we've told them our concerns and they just didn't really listen.
Newman is known as a highliner. That's someone who's an especially successful fisherman. But he's not the only one who broke up with Peter Pan. More than half of King Cove's seine fleet switched to delivering their salmon to Silver Bay in False Pass last summer. Add all that fish up, and you start to get some pretty serious unintended consequences. Gary Hennig is King Cove's city administrator.
It really started with me as soon as we got the first tax returns in for last June.
By the end of the summer, Hennig says, it was clear that King Cove was on track to lose 25% of its total annual general fund income. That's because historically, about half of the city's revenues, around $1.5 million, come from taxes on fish. Now, Hennig and the city council are trying to sort out which services they're going to have to cut. That could include hours at the teen and rec centers, along with a program that helps seniors pay for their utilities.
You know, to pick on kids and to pick on seniors, that's a lot of emotions. And this is really what the mayor and the council are struggling with, you know, that we know the value and the pride and the reasons that we have done these things, but the times are changing and we can't afford them.
Now King Cove could be in for an even bigger shakeup. Earlier this month, news broke that the Japanese seafood corporation that owns Peter Pan is putting the company up for sale. Peter Pan hasn't said anything publicly about the King Cove plant's future, and it didn't respond to requests for comment. It's not clear who, if anyone, might want to buy it. Observers say the seafood processing industry is way overbuilt in the region. There's King Cove's big plant, Silver Bay's new one, and two more in the same area. John Fiorillo, executive editor of a trade publication called Intrafish Media, says the industry seems overdue for a restructuring that could lead to some players shutting down.
Everybody is wondering why so much, you know, why such an arms race in a place where you really don't have enough resource. Somebody's going to be a casualty.
Hennig, King Cove's administrator, says the city council is trying to be careful not to cause panic. But they're also mindful of the history of some of the other villages along the Alaska Peninsula and in the Aleutians, some of which have disappeared when their fish processing plants closed down. King Cove isn't the only village in the region that suffered amid a downturn in the fishing industry recently. Another plant in the nearby town of Sand Point closed for the winter amid a crash in cod stocks linked to global warming.
We've got to start educating our fellow citizens that things are happening that we really don't have control over. With a little bit more time and hopefully a little bit more good news, maybe we'll end up being okay, but we're certainly not close to that now.
Until King Cove finds out what's happening to Peter Pan's processing plant, Hennig says the village is going to have to be very careful about how it spends its money. In Anchorage, I'm Nat Herz.
Sea ice in the Bering Sea has reached the normal extent for this time of year, which bodes well for those in western Alaska who use the ice for snow machining or subsistence purposes. Rick Toman, a climatologist with the Alaska Center for Climate Assessment and Policy, says as of Friday, the entire Norton Sound is ice-covered, with some breaks in the ice here and there.
And those will get moved around with the wind, but at this point, we don't really have anything that would be described as open water. And unlike the last couple of years, we had pretty thick ice there in southern Norton Sound as well. that is all a big change from the last couple years and good news for the region.
The National Weather Service sea ice forecast shows lots of shore fast ice in the southern Norton Sound, with sea ice thickness increasing along the coast from Nome to Unalakleet. And finally, volunteers slinging bales of hay signaled the first volunteer event for this year's Iditarod Trail Sled Dog Race. Nearly 60 volunteers gathered in Anchorage last Thursday to prep 1,500 bales of hay for shipment to the 20 checkpoints along the trail. Mushers will use the hay for bedding for the 800 or so dogs along the 1,000-mile trail from Anchorage to Nome. The race has its ceremonial start March 7th in Anchorage, followed by a competitive start the next day about 50 miles north of Alaska's largest city. Volunteers this week will help prepare shipments of mushers' gear and food for the human and canine participants. That's it for the KTOO News Update for Monday, February 17th, 2020. I'm Jeremy Shea. Thanks for listening.